Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om. Om. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 19. Chapters entitled The Island of Jambudweep, text number 22. Kim duskarai na kratubista povratayar. Kim duskarai na kratubista povratayar. Dana divirva dujayena falguna. Dana divirva dujayena falguna. Nayatra nayayano pada pankaja. Nayatra narayana pada pankaja. Smitir pamustati sahendriyayo savat. Smitir pamustati sahendriyo savat. Translation purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The land of Bhardvarsya, translation. The demigods continued, after performing the very difficult task of executing Vedic ritualistic sacrifices, undergoing austerities, observing vows and giving in charity, we have achieved this position as inhabitants of the heavenly planets. But what is the value of this achievement? Here we are certainly very engaged in material sense gratification. And therefore, we can hardly remember the lotus feet of Lord Narayan. Indeed, because of our excessive sense gratification, we have almost forgotten his lotus feet. Purport. The land of Bhardvarsya is so exalted that by taking birth there, one can not only attain the heavenly planets, but can also go directly back home, back to Godhead. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 9:25, yanti deva vatam devaham pritin yanti pritrin vataha bhutani yanche bhuteja yanti mam yajino pimam. Those who worship the demigods will take birth among the demigods, and those who worship ghosts and spirits will take birth among such beings, and those who worship the ancestors will go to the ancestors, but those who worship me will live with me. People in the land of Bhardvarsya generally follow the Vedic principles and consequently perform great austerities and sacrifices which they can be elevated to the heavenly planets. However, what is the use of such great attainments? As stated in Bhagavad Gita 9:21, Shinne Punya Marcha Lokem Vishanti. After the results of one's sacrifices, charity, and other pious activities expire, one must return to the lower planetary systems and again feel the pangs of birth and death. However, one who becomes Krishna conscious can go back to Krishna. Yanti mam yajino pimam. Therefore, the demigods even regret having been elevated to the higher planetary systems. The denizens of the heavenly planets regret that they could not take full advantage of being born in a land of Bhardvarsya. Instead, they become captivated by higher standards of sense gratification, and therefore they have forgot the lotus feet of Narayan at the time of death. The conclusion is that one who has taken birth in the land of Bhardvarsya must follow the instructions given by the Personality of Godhead. Yat gatvavnan nivartante tadama paramam mamam. One should try to return home back to Godhead, to the Vaikuntha planets, or to the topmost Vaikuntha planet, Goloka Vrindavan, to live eternally in full blissful knowledge in the company of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Translation again. So people in general who are what we say, they have values, they have good intentions, they understand that to be a good person and to live according to the laws of nature, the laws of God, they consider that to be the perfection of life. And therefore, they perform austerities and penances in order not to return back to Godhead, but to achieve a nice material position somewhere in this world so they can enjoy sense gratification in a, what is called an elevated type of way. Nice sense gratification, pleasing sense gratification, that kind of sense gratification that is without sinful activities. To be a good person, moral, giving and charity, to have good qualities, to respect and honor others, to put oneself in a position of helping those who are in less fortunate positions. We find in welfare activities, philanthropic work, humanitarian work, so many types of activities which are meant to improve the material conditions of society. And they consider that the goal of life. And this is practically the world within the level of those who have good qualities. Hardly anyone really wants to get out of this place. Hardly anyone really wants to get out. Everyone somehow or other wants to somehow make some nice activities and arrangements to somehow or other be happy here. Or some sacrifice here so in my next life I can get a good material position. Nice wife, nice family, good qualities, nice facilities to enjoy sense gratification. So many things. Or elevation to higher planets. Being born on Swargaloka, where life is, compared to the Earth planet, so incredibly long. The average person, according to the scriptures, of course, the average has changed due to the effects of the society, is supposed to live about 100 years in this Kali Yuga. This is the duration of life that is designated for the average living being, human being in this age, 100 years. So one day on this Earth planet, or one day on the higher planets, I should say, is equal to 6 months on the Earth planet. That's a long time. So if you multiply that by 100 years compared to our Earth years, tremendous. That's about 10,000 years. So the average person in the heavenly planets live 10,000 years by Earth calculations in the higher planets. 10,000 years. And they can enjoy great amounts of sense gratification. Nice, beautiful people. Hardly any calamities from material nature. Disease is hardly even noticed. Nothing. Not too many doctors there. Here we have a lot of doctors. Everything is very nicely arranged. But here the demigods are praying. We got all this. We performed austerities and penances. We gave in charity. We made sacrifice to achieve that. This was our goal. And we got it. But what's the result? We can hardly remember the Lord. We're forgetting the Lord. We become overly absorbed in our nice, so-called nice situation. And what is the result? Forgetfulness of Krishna. Forgetfulness of Narayan, as it's mentioned here. Therefore, the scriptures say, what is the value of such things? If you forget the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vishnu Purana says, this is the greatest of all mistakes, anomalies, deficiencies, is to forget Krishna, even for a second. So, people who are too well off, and people who are very little well off, we can say very deprived, both of them have a hard time remembering God, because one is struggling like an animal just to live from day to day, and the other one is just has so much that they're absorbed in trying to enjoy it and become intoxicated by it. And they think this is success. This is illusion. Because pious activities, what they speak about the forgetfulness of God, they're like money. And what happens when you have money? You spend it. And when you spend it, what happens? It's gone. And after one is gone, then you're poor. In the same way, pious activities, it's explained that in the heavenly planets, it's like the demigods, they fall. The residents fall from the heavenly planets, come back down to the material world, earth planet. Just like the comparisons given in the Shastras, just like a machine or an airplane runs out of gas. Right? You ever drive in your car, all of a sudden, there's no gas, right? It's happened to you, right? All of a sudden, you stop. You can't go anywhere. You can try to start it, do so many things, but everything is working nice, but there's no gas. You're stuck. So you stop. So in the same way, those who are in the heavenly planets, when their pious activity, padantiyada, they fall down again, back. So what is the value of such achievements? It's all temporary. But what is the worst thing here? That's not the worst thing. Worst thing is that you forget Krishna, and they're lamenting. What is the use of our good position if we forget you, our eternal, worshipful, lovable Lord, who is the source of our very existence? What is the value of these things? So sometimes the Lord will put a devotee or some living entity in a deprived position, just to wake them up, take everything away. Prabhupada also says that if Krishna's kind to you, he gives you so many things. But if he's extra kind, he takes away. His kindness is giving, but his special mercy and love is that he takes away. So what do you have to do? You have to remember Krishna. You have to surrender to Krishna. You have to pray to Krishna. You have to understand that there is nothing in life but Krishna. So it's mercy that the Lord sometimes, or this material energy works as the Lord's agent, to put one in a difficult situation. So they're praying here. What's the use of our situation? Prabhupada says that the demigods, there's a group of demigods that are very intelligent, and they understand that Lord Chaitanya has come on this planet, and he's spreading the Yuga Dharma, the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. And this is the easy and most practical and what we say, fastest means for self-realization in this age. So Prabhupada says the demigods are lining up to take birth in this movement. Many of our children were coming from higher planets. They're devas, many of them. They were demigods in previous lives. They come, of course, living entities come from different places. But many of them are demigods, because the demigods are praying, let us take birth in Lord Chaitanya's movement. So we can take advantage of the supreme mercy of chanting the holy names and engaging in devotional service with no distractions, right? No distractions. There's two kinds of distractions, too little and too much. If you have too little, you're distracted because you're always struggling on that level. But if you have too much, then it's another problem. It's a bigger problem anyway, because you get distracted by the things. Therefore, simplicity is a very important part of successful execution of devotional service, to be simple. Now, we see even people who have a lot can become devotees, but it's hard. It's harder. It's much more difficult. It's much more difficult. It's much more difficult because of that facility and that, just like the other day I was thinking, this is another example. You know, you're struggling to become Krishna consciousness. So people are paying you their respects and obeisances to you. So if you're thinking, I'm okay because people are worshiping me, they're honoring me, they're respecting me, therefore I might be suffering and struggling, but still, I'm all right. I'm getting respect. Then what happens, a type of consciousness starts to manifest where you don't try so hard. You don't see your situation as being that you have to grab onto the lotus feet of the Lord at every second and pray for His mercy and engage in His devotional service. In other words, using that same analogy, that if you have so many things, you think, it's not so bad. I'm okay. I'm okay. But all these things, as they say, are borrowed. Borrowed. Our intelligence, our ability, our facility, whatever else we may receive is given to us. And it can be taken away at every second. So therefore, what is the correct understanding is yena kena prakarena mana krishna divesait. Somehow or other, remember Krishna. Whether you're wealthy or poor or whatever your situation, don't forget Krishna. Because that is the greatest of all mistakes, is to forget the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So therefore, one should live in such a way as that they can remember Krishna. That's the point. If we forget Krishna, or we forget of our relationship with Krishna, or if we forget how to serve Krishna, then no matter what our situation is, it's not really beneficial at all. We could be a brahmachari, or a grihastha, or whatever our situation is. If we're not consciously always endeavored to remember Krishna and to serve Krishna, then our situation, our consciousness needs to be adjusted. Therefore, we should not forget Krishna. So here, the demigods are praying, let me take birth in Bhardvarsha. What's Bhardvarsha? In this case, the planet was Earth. The whole Earth was under what is called Vedic culture, or Bhardvarsha, 5,000 years ago. But now, Bhardvarsha is considered to be this little tract of land known as India, where piety, spirituality, and those things that are conducive to making a successful golden life are opportune or easily available. It's easily available. So they're praying, let me take birth in this situation. What's the use of our very nice material situation? And as devotees, we also have to be careful to execute devotional service free from a desire for sense gratification. Because if we don't have that desire to get out of this material world, then we can also wind up on the heavenly planets in our next life. And Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada said that about his disciples. This is a statement by Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, many of my disciples will take birth in Swargaloka in their next life. Prabhupada said that. Of course, he was referring to not you, but he was referring to his disciples, many of them who came to Krishna consciousness, but then again got attracted by what is called not pure, but mixed the moods of devotional service, trying to find happiness within doing some service and at the same time finding material happiness. So Prabhupada warned us, because Swargaloka, I mean, it's better to be on the earth planet, or even in a lesser position, to be on Swargaloka and be an illusion about your situation. Be an illusion. Yeah, the greatest, the people who are in the greatest illusion are the people who have the most. People who have little, they're not an illusion. They may be suffering, and they may also forget Krishna. But it's easier for them to remember God. It's easier for them to understand that I need God than those who have a lot. So this is the point, that one should not aspire for anything material. One should not aspire for any situation. What is that verse? Tasyaiva hetu patite na kovita na labhyate ta bhamata upariyada. Very. And then the rest of the verse goes on. But the first two lines, it says that those who are actually intelligent, those who are actually and philosophically inclined, should not aspire for any position from the highest planet, Brahmaloka, down to the lowest, Pataloka. In other words, one who has good intelligence doesn't aspire for anything within the material world. Even Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma was cursing his birth when he offended Krishna. Brahma became so puffed up by his position that when he saw Krishna playing with his cowherd boys, he was thinking, who's this cowherd boy? He killed this demon, Agasur. Now he's sitting on the bank of the... Krishna had worked his illusionary potency, and Brahma couldn't see his worshipful Supreme Personality of Godhead. And therefore, he tried to play a trick on Krishna. He tried to steal his calves and his cowherd boys, which he did. Or at least he thought he did. And he was thinking, I am Brahma, and so therefore I can do it. But what did he do? He wound up being bewildered. Not only did he not steal them, he stole what is called the shadow reflections of the cowherd boys and calf. He never stole them, because Krishna's associates are eternally situated in the spiritual energy, and Brahma cannot touch the spiritual energy. Although he apparently thought he stole them, he didn't. What he got was the shadow, just like when Ravana thought he stole Sita. He didn't get Sita, he got the shadow Sita. Same thing. Same thing. So he was thinking, look what I'm doing. But Krishna just showed him, you're just a fool. You're Brahma, but what do you know? So, and later on he repented. Not only did he repent, he became so sorry. He offered wonderful prayers after he realized Krishna had to smash him, smash his false ego, like he did with Indra. When Indra tried to, kill the inhabitants of Vrindavan with rainstorms, same thing. Big, powerful demigods, they become illusioned by their position. They become illusioned by their facility and power. Yeah. People who have a lot are intoxicated by what they have. Very hard to be humble. Very hard to feelingly offer prayers to the Lord when you're in a good position. It's really hard. It's possible. But therefore, what does Kreen Kunti play? My dear Lord, let those calamities come again and again. Therefore, we can see you again and again. She's Krishna's aunt. She's in a very, very royal position. She has two wonderful families, the Vrishnis and the Kurus and the Vrishnis. she's respected. But she says, all these things that are surrounding me, they're impediments to me remembering you and serving you. So therefore, give me some calamities. Let me have some calamity. Why? So I can remember you. Because the greatest calamity is not a material calamity. It's to forget Krishna. That's the greatest calamity. To be in the illusion that you're okay. There's nobody who's okay. Only those who are situated in devotional service to the Lord are in the proper and best position. Otherwise, anyone in any material situation is subject to, at any second, can be all finished. Just one little movement of the material energy in a different way, and everything is finished. Right? There was one man, he was an American, very intelligent man. He was a health expert. So he devised this diet, the mucus-free diet. And he devised a certain regimen of foodstuffs, which mainly consisted of fruit. Practically everything was fruit. And then he propagated it. He followed the diet himself. And then later on he started, seeing the benefits of it. So he wrote some articles, and then people became attracted, and then he developed some following, and then he became more popular. And then one day the health experts took a test on his body and found that his health was the best for someone of that age. He was in his 40s. He had very good health, extremely good health. So he was so successful. So one day he was giving a lecture at one place, speaking about his diet. So after he came out, and he was walking to his car. What happened? There was some oil on the street. Some slippery oil or something. He stepped there, not seeing it, and he fell. He hit his head. He died. He died healthy. At least he died healthy, anyway. But, see this? Padam, padam, ya, padam, natesham. Oh. This is material energy. Any moment, a little inattention, finished. Yeah. So, who's in a good position? No one knows. Only those who feelingly and with determination take shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord. When you take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, you're protected by the Lord. You're safe. You're safe from the calamities of the material energy, but most of all, you're in the right position. Because that is your position, to take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the demigods, they're offering amazing prayers. I mean, here's very powerful demigods, and they're saying, what is the use? We work so hard performing austerities, observing vows, giving in charity, and we achieved the heavens. Very nice material sense situation. But what happened? What's the use? We can hardly remember you, Lord. We can hardly remember you. So, we take value from those who understand, who have everything, but understand what is the value if we forget Krishna. Okay, so today is the appearance day of His Divine Grace, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaj, the spiritual master of A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Today is also the appearance day of Purushottama Thakur and the disappearance day of Srila Gaur Govinda Maharaj, one of ISKCON's most illustrious spiritual master and a very, very wonderful Vaishnav. So I was asked to speak a little bit today on Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. And to be able to speak on such a great personality is beyond my qualifications or abilities. But it's the duty of us, the duty of the devotee to glorify the Lord. It's the duty of the devotee to glorify those who are great souls. So as a matter of duty, and of course as a matter of great honor also, I will try to say something in respect of this great Paramahansa Vaishnava. Srila Prabhupada was asked to say something about his spiritual master. He said, "What can I say? He is a Vaikuntha man." He is, in other words, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati was sent by the Supreme Lord to come and be a very important part of spreading Lord Chaitanya's movement. He was sent from the special entourage of the Lord himself as an emissary to bring about revolutionary change in the world today. And it was actually by his determination and his, what we say, purity, his writings, that Krishna consciousness was spread all over the world. Because it was his desire to take Krishna consciousness outside the boundaries of India. He was born February 9th, 1874, as the fifth son of Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur. His birth was quite interesting. He was born with the, what we say, the umbilical cord that connects the body of the child to the mother. It was wrapped around his body like a Brahmin thread. His umbilical cord was just like a Brahmin. And when his parents saw that, especially his father, he understood, here is a very special personality. Because Bhaktivinoda Thakur was practically alone in his fight to spread Krishna consciousness. Lord Chaitanya's movement for 200 years, from about the mid-1600s to about the mid-800s, 1800s, had fallen into the hands of people who are not really representing Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They were unscrupulously taking Lord Chaitanya's teachings and applied it in different ways. And so many, what we say, asampradayas, those that who claimed allegiance to Lord Chaitanya had sprung up. There were actually 13 main, Bao, Saki Bedi, Jat Goswami, Gauranga Nagari, Nityananda Vamsa. These are just a few. There's a list of 13 main ones, but there were many others who were deviating from the principles of Lord Chaitanya's teaching and pure bhakti. And that became very strong. Bhaktivinoda Thakur took up the fight to bring Lord Chaitanya's movement back. And he successfully achieved so many things. He again found Lord Chaitanya's birthplace. He wrote so many books on pure devotional service. He explained pure devotional service in relationship to other forms of spiritual life in such a way that he again brought pure devotional service back to the forefront, especially within the area of Bengal. But he was getting old, and he was also considering who will continue once I leave. So he prayed. He prayed, "My dear Lord, please send someone from your personal entourage to continue this mission." Not only did he prayed with great feeling. And little did he know that it was his own son who appeared in his family, who took on the name Bimala Prasad. His name was Bimala Prasad. And one very interesting incident happened in an early part of his life. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was living in Jagannath Puri on Grand Road. If you go today, you can see the house where Bhaktivinoda Thakur was living, and that's the place where Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati was born. It's right on the Jagannath path there. It's a temple, actually, in a house also. And that's where he took birth. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was one of the magistrates. He was a magistrate, but he was also very much involved with some of the affairs of the Jagannath temple. But at one point, he had to leave Jagannath Puri on some business. And his son, Bimala Prasad, was about 6 months old. And during that time, there was a Rath Yatra festival. So his mother, whose name was Bhagavi Devi, she took the child to take darshan of Jagannath. And so the car just happened to stop right in front of the house of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and she brought the baby to the lotus feet of Lord Jagannath. She placed the child right at the feet of Lord Jagannath. And guess what happened? As soon as the child was there, he reached up for Lord Jagannath. The child just put his hand up to touch the deity. And at that time, Lord Jagannath's garland fell on top of Bimala Prasad, like a garland. Encircled him like a garland. His mother was so happy. And when Bhaktivinoda Thakur came home, she told him. And then from that incident, he realized that this actually was the ray of Vishnu. He understood simply by that incident that this is my son has been sent by the Supreme Lord. At the age of 7, his father gave him some beads to chant on and taught him the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. He was an intelligent child, very intelligent. Even at the age of 7, he memorized the whole Bhagavad Gita. He memorized the whole Bhagavad Gita at the age of 7 years old. When he was 11 years old, he was a genius, even in his studies within school. He developed a certain style of writing, which is called shorthand, type of shorthand writing called Bikanto. And it was introduced within the school systems. This 11-year-old child developed this style of writing called Bikanto. He began to read not only his school books, but also his father's books. Bhaktivinoda Thakur had written so many books at that time. And so he was studying and reading. As he was growing up, there's one story I forgot, which is really important. When he was 4 years old, this was a very amazing story. When he was 4 years old, one day, while he was in the house, he saw some mangoes that were sitting there. So he took one. And then his father told him, what have you done? This mango is meant to be offered to the Lord. Therefore, you have to wait before you take. So his father wasn't angry, but he sternly chastised him just to teach him a lesson at 4 years old. The child, Bimala Prasad, realizing he had committed an offense or mistake, of course there's no offense, 4-year-old child. Little children can't commit offenses because they don't know. We commit offenses, but children, they don't know. So he was feeling so guilty that he decided to take a vow that throughout my life, I will never take mango again. No. For me, as a Westerner, doesn't seem to be too much of an austerity, because in America, you know, if you get a mango, it's very rare. And if you can find a good mango, it's even rarer. But in here, in India, there's mango season, right? And it's so nice. Prabhupada said, mango is the king of all fruits. Not only is it very tasty, but it's extremely healthy. It's very nutritious. The nutritionists have analyzed the mango, saying all nutrients are there within the mango. Simply by eating one or two mangoes, you can derive so much nutritious ingredients. Oh. And so his whole life, he never took a mango. And Prabhupada would say many times his disciples, not knowing, they would offer him a mango. And he would say, I'm sorry, I'm an offender, I cannot take. He kept that vow throughout his whole life. Amazing. 4-year-old child made such an extreme vow. I mean, we make vows sometimes. My dear Lord, I will be your devotee. I will chant Hare Krishna. I will read so many books. I'll be nice to everybody. Right? Then what happens? Things get a little difficult. And we say, my dear Lord, oh, please forgive me. I couldn't keep my vow. But I'll try again. Right? You know. Better to make a resolution instead of a vow. So he was very, very determined. And of course, as he was growing up, he developed this intense desire to learn. And he would study. And while he was going to school, he was getting very good grades. In fact, he wouldn't even study the books and still get the best grades. He would spend his time in the libraries, reading the books in the school libraries. He would read the whole library. All the books. He had such an intense desire for knowledge. Prabhupada said another thing about his spiritual master. My spiritual master, he was a walking encyclopedia. He knew everything about anything. But then, of course, later on, he considered it all useless. He never forgot anything he ever heard or ever read. Right? Can you imagine? We can't even remember what we did yesterday. I read something yesterday. What did I read? I was reading. I read that. Don't ask me what I read, but I can tell you something, but not too much. I forget, right? Age of Kali, forgetfulness is more prominent than memory. It's very strong, forgetfulness, right? We even forget from moment to moment. Somebody tells me their name. Maharaj, this is Govinda Prabhu. So they'll introduce me to somebody, and they'll tell me their name. And I'll be sitting there talking to them, and then I'll think, Prabhu, what's your name again? I know you told me, but somehow or other I forgot. Forget people's names, yeah. Sometimes I'll see somebody, Prabhu, yes, Prabhu. I know you have a name, but I'll call you Prabhu. I can't remember who you are, right? You don't want to be embarrassed by... So you forget people's names. You actually know the person. Something like that. So this is, you know, this is Kali Yuga. Easy forget. He never forgot anything. Prabhupada said he was a walking encyclopedia. So he was getting good grades, establishing very nice scholastic abilities, also getting offers for employment based on his knowledge. But at one point, he was thinking, you know, if I continue to go to school and get all these good grades and graduate, guess what? They're gonna want me to get married. So I'll just drop out. Better to be a dropout than have to go through all that. So he decided to quit school. But while he was in school, I should not forget this point, he developed one club. It was called the August Assembly. And the club was that anybody who wanted to join the club had to take a vow of celibacy throughout their whole life. This was the vow to join the club. He was the only one that kept it. It was a very difficult vow to keep. But after a certain part, he left college due to the pressure of getting married. Before that, while he was studying in school, he was also, Prabhupada said, he was also a great astrologer. He wrote one astrological treatise called Surya Siddhanta, which was a very expert explanation of the science of astrology. One time, you know, devotees in the Hare Krishna movement, you know, they like to dabble in different things. So one time, you know, devotees started to get into astrology. So, and they said to Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, your spiritual master, he was an astrologer, wasn't he? He knew astrology good." Prabhupada said, "Yes, but he gave it up." He gave it up. As he was seeing, Prabhupada was seeing all these devotees were thinking, you know, I have to, astrology is fine for, generally for the Grihastha ashram. It can be used for so many things, for weddings, for marriages, for business adventures like that. You can use astrological things. It's recommended. But generally for brahmacharis, yeah, our astrological thing is that, you know, we can count that Krishna will be there, that our japa beads are still there. You know, what do you need in brahmachari ashram? You know, it's, Krishna takes care of the devotees. So we don't have to make so many adventures. So Prabhupada said, astrology, yes, we can use that, you know. But not to an excess. And generally, the renounced order of life doesn't engage too much in that. Because Prabhupada says, when you clap your hands in front of the deities, what happens? Your astrological determination or destination becomes changed. In other words, as your karma, as you engage in devotional service, your material tendencies and karma are also changed like that. So he was a great astrologer, but he gave it up. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was preaching and giving lectures in different places, also at Swananda Kunj. I don't have the exact writing here. And Gorky Shore Das Babaji Maharaj, who was a great, great renunciate, used to come and hear Bhaktivinoda Thakur's discourses. He would come and sit in the back and listen to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He would spend practically all of his time chanting Hare Krishna and living in seclusion, away from the general populace. But at times he would come and just to hear Bhaktivinoda Thakur, because he appreciated Bhaktivinoda Thakur's discourses. So during that time, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, whose name was still Bimala Prasad at that time, he started seeing this great personality coming, and he became very much attracted to Gorkishore Das Babaji. So at one point, his father told him, "You should think about taking a spiritual master." So he revealed his mind. He said, "I have set my heart and mind on Gorkishore Das Babaji." His father said, "He is not taking disciples, but still, you should go to him." So one time when Gorkishore Das Babaji Maharaj was doing his bhajan, with great humility and great desire within his heart, he approached Gorkishore Das Babaji for initiation. And Gorkishore Das Babaji Maharaj says, "I'm sorry, but I don't accept disciples." But little Bimala Prasad, he was so determined. He wanted to have the lotus feet of Gorkishore Das Babaji Maharaj as his eternal spiritual master and guide. So he continued to plead, and Gorkishore Das Babaji Maharaj said, "All right, I will ask Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when I see him. You come back in a few days. So he left, came back in a few days, approached Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj again and asked him, did you meet Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Yes. Did you ask him about my request? Gaurakishore Das Babaji said, I forgot. But I will see him again soon. Therefore, come back. So again, after some days he came back. Again he pleaded, again he asked. Did you see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Yes. Did you ask him about me? Yes. What did he say? He didn't answer. That was the answer. Lord Chaitanya didn't answer. So Gaurakishore Das Babaji, or Bimala Prasad, was so brokenhearted. He realized, what is the use of this human form of life? Unless one can take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, one cannot attain the goal of life. What is that verse? Sagurum eva, what is that? Vigyartam eva bo. Tad vigyar eva. Abhigacchet. Tad vigyartam saguru eva abhigacchet. Prabhupada says the word abhigacchet is not a small word, it's a big word. The word abhigacchet means must. One must take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, inquire for submissively, render service with a desire to achieve the shelter of his lotus feet, and engage in the process of pure devotional service. The whole point of chanting Hare Krishna, reading the books, and so many other things is to purify our consciousness so we can come to the platform of taking shelter of the Lord's pure representative and then making steady progress on the path back home, back to Godhead. Therefore, Prabhupada said, initiation means beginning. Initiation means beginning. We're practicing. If we're not initiated yet, we're practicing. We're purifying our consciousness. We're awakening our desire for Krishna. And when our desire for Krishna becomes strong enough, then Krishna will send his pure representative. And then we take advantage of Krishna's mercy in the form of his pure representative and engage in devotional service. And that is the beginning of spiritual life. So when little Bimala Prasad heard that he wasn't being accepted by his spiritual master, he was devastated. He actually thought, what is the use of this human form of life? So therefore, let me end it. So he decided to end his life. So he was about to jump off a bridge. Just as he was going towards the bridge, Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj was walking the other way. He said, I was just testing you, just to see how sincere you are. But I can see you are very, very sincere. Therefore, I will accept you as my disciple. And he gave him the name Sri Varshavanivi Devi Daitai Das. That was his name. That was his initiation. He got initiated in the year 1900 and became the disciple of Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. He continued in his devotional service. Also, he received many instructions both from his spiritual master, Gaurakishore Das Babaji, and from his father, Bhakti Vinod Thakur. He considered both of them to be his spiritual masters. At one point, some discussions had arisen within the area that who is more elevated, Brahmins or Vaishnavas? The Brahmin community became very much enthusiastic to explain that one who's born in a Brahmin family, their birth is the highest of all births. When, therefore, there is no better birth than the Brahman, there's no higher than the personality as a Brahman. Just the other day we were hearing a class from Gopinath Prabhu when he was explaining, what are the qualities and characteristics and responsibilities of the Brahminical order, how much responsibility they have to live up to the standards of sattvic lifestyle, worshipping the Lord, understanding the Shastras, being compassionate, being charitable, so many qualities. And therefore they receive so much honor based on their qualities and their position. But somehow or other that whole principle got polluted by the idea that if you're born in a Brahmin family, you're a Brahmin. It was by janma but not by guna. Janma became the standard. Even today, born in a Brahmin family, but what are you doing? Oh, I'm pulling a rickshaw, right? Or I'm born in a Brahmin family, but I work for this company. Brahmins don't take employment from anyone. A Brahmin will never work. Prabhupada said a Brahmin will die and starve before he becomes a servant of someone else. It's mentioned in the seventh canto. Now, don't quit your jobs now. But anyway, I'm just telling you, this is just the standard. Brahmin doesn't take service from anyone. Brahmin gives service. He worships the Supreme. Partan, patan, yajan, yajan, dana, pratigraha. These are the six qualities or characteristics of Brahminical life. To study the scriptures, to preach the scriptures, to worship the Lord, to teach others to worship the Lord, to give in charity and to receive charitable gifts. These are the six characteristics that make up Brahminical activities. And what are their qualities? Cleanliness, truthfulness, peacefulness, equanimity, knowledge, realization, simplicity, religiousness, tolerance, austerity, so many qualities. Well, the Brahmins in that time, of course, they didn't have these qualities, but because they were born in a Brahmin family, many of them were claiming that we are the best of all in society. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when a few Vaishnavas were saying, no, actually, Vaishnavas are greater than Brahmins because for so many reasons they explain. So then it got to the point where there was a public discussion to prove who is more elevated, the Brahmins or the Vaishnavas. So this was in a place called Midnapur, and it was on in September, I think it was September 9th through 11th. There was a three-day program for 3 days. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was supposed to be the representative of the Vaishnav community to speak on behalf. And there were many, many elevated brahmanas who were coming to discuss also. So people came gathered from everywhere for this debate. But a day before the event, Bhaktivinoda Thakur came down with rheumatic fever. He became terribly sick. He became bedridden. He couldn't even leave his bed. So he couldn't go. So he's thinking, who could come? And then his son, at that time, Sri Varshavanavi Devi Deity Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, he came, he said, Father, I will go on your behalf. I have studied the situation carefully and I have written something based on that study. And then he showed his father what he had written. And his father was shocked. This is amazing. This child has written such amazing. Of course, he wasn't a child anymore. He was about 30 years old. This young man has written such amazing work. That work later was published as a book called Brahmins and Vaishnavas. Very lengthy book. And based on he studied all aspects of Brahminical life and Vaishnav life in terms of their responsibilities and their services. And then he presented that. And then he was asked to go. His father said, you go on my behalf. So he went. And he was unknown at the time. When he came there, they were wondering, who is this young, Vaishnava? So he was asked to speak first, and the Brahmins were there. So he began. And when he began, he started to glorify the Brahmins. He was glorifying the Brahmins, stating verse after verse from the Shastras that one who is a Brahmin, he is the best of all. Quoting so many verses in glorification of the Brahmin. And the Brahmins, they were sitting there, they were thinking, this is wonderful. He's on our side. He's one of us. He's glorifying us. He understands. But then at one point, he changed his course in the lecture. And then he started to glorify the Vaishnavas. Then he compared. And he said, and then he compared, he, quoting certain verses, he said, one who is born in a Brahmin family but doesn't have the Brahmin qualities cannot even save himself, what to speak about saving others. And one who's born in a Chandala family, a low family, if they are a Vaishnava, they can save the whole world. He quoted certain verses. That it doesn't matter your birth, that's not the qualification. The qualification is qualities or characteristics, activities, not simply birth. I mean, birth has an advantage. There's no question. If one is born in a Brahminical family, it's a good birth. It's an advantage. Prabhupada says, if you're born in a family of musicians, then you're hearing music throughout your life. Therefore, there's a good chance you'll become a musician, and a good one, because of the exposure to music. But if you think that just by being in that family and not practicing music, I'm a musician, then that is not the understanding. The understanding is there's an advantage. And one who takes advantage of that advantage can excel extremely. But people don't want to work. They simply want to just go by someone else's mercy. And therefore, what happens is that people claim but have no quality and characteristics. It's like Prabhupada. He came to the West and he picked up people who were very sinful, very degraded, very, very, you know, outside of the whole Vanashram system. Not only outside, way outside. I mean, so many personalities who had no good qualities, but because of Prabhupada's purity and his compassion and his mercy, his intelligence, he was able to, you know, transform bell metal and mercury into gold. If you take bell metal and you add mercury at a certain temperature, you can make gold. So somehow or other, Prabhupada transformed the Western, you know, people into Vaishnavas. That was his power. And people criticize. But then others who were born in good families, who had so much, you know, sukriti, they were doing other things. They were eating meat. They weren't following the principles. But still they were claiming that we are better because somehow or other we were born in a certain family or in a certain culture. But Prabhupada showed it is not by birth, it is by qualities like that. So after explaining all of these slokas, sloka after sloka, and defeating all these, the principle of birth, the crowd who were listening to this lecture, they became so amazed. Who is this young scholar, devotee? And they just, all of a sudden, when everything was finally concluded, there was no question who had won the debate. The Brahmins didn't even speak because they knew they couldn't say anything. They just got up and walked away. They were defeated without even trying. The crowd just became so enthusiastic that they ran towards Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati to grab his feet and to get the mercy of the dust of his lotus feet. But what happened was there were so many people there that the police were worried So they held the crowds back. They took Bhaktisiddhanta and brought him into another area, and they took gallons and gallons of water and washed his feet with it. And then they threw the water on everybody. And this way everyone got the mercy of his lotus feet. This was in 1911. In 1914, his father left the planet. Bhaktivinoda Thakur passed away from this world in June of 1914. And in 1915, just a year after, his spiritual master, Gorkishor Das Babaji Maharaj, left. So both his father and his spiritual master, within a period of about 15 months, had left the planet. And he was feeling somewhat alone. He was thinking, what can I do? You know, now I'm all practically alone. How will I be able to spread Lord Chaitanya's movement? And one night, when he was in this distressful state of consciousness, he fell asleep. And the most amazing thing happened in the dream. Lord Chaitanya and all his associates appeared to him in the dream and told him, we're with you. We're behind you. You just preach and you will receive our mercy and our empowerment. So he took heart from that dream, and then he continued his preaching. And well, 1918, he took sannyas at the age of 44 years old. His spiritual master had left, and there was no one there to give him sannyas. So he did something which was revolutionary. He took a picture of his spiritual master. He sat in front of the picture, and having studied the rituals for sannyas initiation given by the Ramanuja Sampradaya, he had studied them. He used that to initiate himself into sannyas. Now, he was a sannyasi. But certain people didn't accept it. How can you give yourself sannyas? But he knew that this was the Lord's desire. There was no one there to tell him. But still, he knew within his own heart that this was the Lord's desire. So he initiated himself into the sannyas order, and he became Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. That was in 1918. And then his preaching started to develop. A few disciples started to come. Kunja Bihari, who was later one of his main disciples. He was one of the first to join him. And his disciples, many of them were grihasthas, they came. And they found a little place for him to preach. And that was one Uttar Delta Junction Road. And then he was having discourses regularly. Now his disciples were paying for the place, and he was staying there, and he was preaching. And he was holding regular classes. One day, Srila Prabhupada, Abhay Charan, he was walking along the street with his friend, Narendranath Malik, who was also one of his classmates and also somewhat of a relative also. So he said, Abhay, there's a very wonderful guru, saintly man. He's giving lecture tonight. Why don't we go to the lecture? And Abhay, Srila Prabhupada said, No, because I've seen so many of these saints and I'm not impressed by any of them. Because when Prabhupada was growing up, his father, Gormohan Day, he was very hospitable, very charitable. He would open his doors to any saintly traveler, and so many people would come. Prabhupada said, in my house, there was at least 3 or 4 sadhus every day. And he would give them a place to stay. He would give them prasad. He would also give them hookah pipe. You know what a hookah pipe is? Smoking hashish. And one time Prabhupada was talking about this to his disciples. And I think it was Tamal Krishna Goswami. He asked Prabhupada, how is it your father was giving hookah pipe? Isn't that like, intoxication? Prabhupada, this is what sadhus do. This is what they do. So my father, he was supplying with the sadhus. That's what they do. I wasn't so much impressed with the qualities of these sadhus that were coming. So he said, I had seen so many. But his friend said, no, actually, Abhai, this one is different. We should go. He's definitely different. But still, Prabhupada didn't want to go. So he grabbed him by the arm. Prabhupada explains, he grabbed me and he dragged me. Come! Come, son. And then this way he dragged him. And they went. Bhaktisiddhanta was sitting on the very roof, and it was in the evening time, and he was giving a lecture on Chaitanya Charitamrita. So there was a small group of people sitting at his feet, and he was lecturing. So Srila Prabhupada and his friend came in, and as soon as they came in, and of course it's customary to pay obeisances, so they paid obeisances at the lotus feet of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And while they were paying obeisances, Bhaktisiddhanta looked and saw Prabhupada. He said, you are a very intelligent young man. Therefore, you should take Lord Chaitanya's mission and spread it to the Western countries. That was the first thing he said. They hadn't even been formally introduced, nothing. While he was paying his obeisances, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he had the quality, he could see who this personality was, Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada said, I was shocked. We haven't even met, and he's already giving me a life mission. So he said, at first I thought, then I got my composure together, and I said, with all good respects, but we are a dependent nation. We are under British rule. We have to have Swaraj. Mm-hmm. Gandhi's movement, right? To liberate India from the British. And Prabhupada was a Gandhian. He followed Gandhi. In fact, Gandhi's non-cooperation movement, Prabhupada refused to accept his diploma from the college when he was graduating. He didn't show up for the ceremony to receive his diploma as a protest to support Gandhi's movement against the British. So Prabhupada argued on that behalf. He said, who will listen to our message? We are a dependent nation. First we need liberation from the British, and then we will be respected within the world. Bhaktisiddhanta said, this political party, that political party, they come and they go. But Lord Chaitanya's mission cannot wait. It is not dependent on who is in control or not. It is the need of the time. And he spoke in such a powerful and convincing way that Srila Prabhupada said, I was defeated. And he said, I was so happy to be defeated. And while he was walking out, he was telling his friend, Narendranath Mulak, he said, I have met a very wonderful saintly person. He is such a wonderful person. He is such a wonderful person. Prabhupada was so enlivened to meet Bhaktisiddhanta. And then, of course, Prabhupada, a little later, right after that, went to Allahabad. And he opened up his chemical pharmaceutical business there. And then just a few years later, he had lost all contact with Bhaktisiddhanta. Some of Bhaktisiddhanta's disciples had came to Allahabad to start a preaching center there. And they had been given the contact of Prabhupada's name. They were told by their spiritual master, you find Abhay Babu, you find Abhay Charan, he can help you. So when they came, Prabhupada said, I was so happy to see the disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta once again. And Prabhupada joined them. And together they were preaching in Allahabad. And who came? Sridhar Maharaj was one. Another, Atul Brahmachari was another. And another a third person, they came. And someone would give the lecture. Sridhar Swami Maharaj would give the lecture. And Prabhupada, although he wasn't a disciple, he would lead the kirtan. Prabhupada would lead the kirtan. Prabhupada was a good kirtan person. He was expert. Prabhupada was expert at kirtan. That was one of his expertise, many expertise. So this was, Prabhupada was so happy again to meet the disciples of his spiritual master. At that time, Bhaktisiddhanta's mission started to really take off. And he was preaching, he was meeting people in high positions, kings and government officials. He was getting recognition and he was opening mats all over India. In fact, he opened 64 mats throughout India. And then he was traveling and preaching, and he was establishing Lord Chaitanya's footprints in many of these places. And he established 29 padapitas, 29 places where Lord Chaitanya's footprints were installed as a worshipful shrine. Just like where we were just in, what temple was that? We went there with Anantapadma temple, right? In Trivandrum, Lord Chaitanya's footprints were there. Many places throughout. Lord Chaitanya, who had visited, his footprints were established as a place of worship there. He set up a printing press and started to print. He called it the Brihat Murdanga. Bhaktisiddhanta said, Murdanga. Murdanga. You play the Murdanga, you can hear it so far. But the great Murdanga, the Brihat Murdanga, is the books. The books can go anywhere and everywhere. The books are the great Murdanga, the Brihat Murdanga. There is no place that the books cannot go. And we saw how was the whole Russian yatra opened up simply by one book. When Shamsundar Prabhu and Srila Prabhupada came into Russia, Malati had put a book, the Bhagavad Gita, in Shamsundar's suitcase, unbeknownst to him. And when he came through customs, you know, the customs official at that time, the immigration people, they wouldn't allow any holy scriptures in. They saw that book, they picked it up. And when he picked it up to look at it, it fell out of his hand. And inside, Malati had put all these pictures, different pictures. And when the book fell, all the pictures fell out. So the customs official got all kinds of nervous, so he was apologetic. He picked up the book and put the pictures back. And without looking at the book, he gave it back to Shamsundar. And that book came into Russia, and that book was copied by hand by some of the first disciples in Russia. And from person to person, that book was gradually copied. Soon, that became book distribution in Russia. And I heard stories where people would give their whole month's income just to get a Bhagavad Gita. They would give a whole month, whatever they made for the whole month, just to get a Bhagavad Gita. Because people were poor during that time. It was very poor. Communism was very oppressive. It was such a dichotomy between the rich and the poor. People were willing to. And there was a book that did it. Many other places too, how books have gone and have opened up many, many preaching areas throughout the world. So Bhakti Siddhanta was very much into distributing transcendental literature. He wrote one paper called The Harmonist, Sarjana Toshini. And when he was printing that every day, he had a biweekly newspaper, a weekly newspaper, and a daily newspaper. So one day, one man came up to him and said, "How is it you can print a newspaper about spiritual subjects every day? Don't you run out of things to say?" Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati went into this great explanation by saying that this material world with all its planets and all its universes is only 1/4 of the whole created existence. Beyond that, there are 3/4 manifestation of the spiritual world. And in every city and in town, we see that there are so many newspapers on so many subject matters that are being written about material affairs. So they're publishing newspapers every day in so many cities throughout the world. And this is only 1/4 of existence. So what can we can put out a newspaper every minute about spiritual news and philosophy. There is so much. So in this way he explained the glories of transcendental subject matters. So he was very much preaching. There's one main story that I forgot in his earlier years, which is a very important story, and I don't want to overlook this story. That was the passing away of Gaurkishore Das Babaji. When Gaurkishore Das Babaji left the world, it was in the 17th of November, 1915. And he was known as a great Babaji. And there were other Babajis also, but they weren't so strict. In fact, they were quite loose. So they wanted to take Gaurkishore Das Babaji's body and establish his samadhi. And there was no disciple except Bhakti Siddhanta at this time. And he wasn't a sannyasi. He was still a brahmachari. So it is explained that only Babajis can establish, you know, samadhis for other Babajis. Brahmacharis are not qualified, are not eligible. So the Babajis had gotten hold of the body of Bhakti, of Gaurkishore Das Babaji, and wanted. But then when Bhakti Siddhanta heard about that, he was living on the other side of the Ganga. He traveled and he approached these Babajis. And he told them, "Actually, I am the only disciple of my spiritual master. I have right. I will establish the samadhi for my spiritual master." And he said, "You're only a brahmachari. We are Babajis." He said, "You're..." Then some discussion came. And he said, "All right, if you are Babajis, then you must answer these questions. You have to live by Babaji standards." So a discussion came, and then some people came around, and a police officer was also there. So they were discussing. So he said to the Babajis, "You can touch, my spiritual master is a Paramahansa. He's a pure, unalloyed Vaishnava. His body is completely spiritual. You can only touch his body if you have not had any illicit relationships within the last year." The police officer stopped. He said, "How will you determine?" And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati said, "I will take their word." So nobody answered. And then he said, "Within the last month." And nobody answered. "Within the last week." Silence. "Within the last 3 days." And then one by one, all the Babajis just turned around and walked away. It's amazing. And the police officer was shocked. So-called Babajis. And we see even now in so-called spiritual circles that are outside of, we say, pure Vaishnav circles, people who are following gurus and yogis and so many things. And what do they teach their followers? That you can have sense gratification, that you can engage in all kinds of activity and still be a spiritual person. Yeah, it's quite common. That's what they teach. I won't mention any names. Maybe some of you know some people are like that, but it's quite common. Just like, especially if you go to the West, there are so many yogis and gurus and so-called sadhus have come from India and have established their teachings and their ashrams and their different programs in the West. And what do they teach people? Some yoga, some meditation. But they say you can have better sex life, you can have better health. All these things come by way of good yoga. Right? Good yoga. Right? So this is going, it goes on in the name of spiritual life. You know? And people claim to be, to have some spiritual life means no sense gratification, no material sense gratification. Spiritual sense gratification, what is that? Someone asked Prabhupada, what is our sense gratification? Prabhupada said, take prasad. That's our sense gratification. Prasadam, right? And prasadam not only satisfies the senses, but enlivens the soul and and awakens the desire to serve the Lord. So that's our sense gratification, prasadam, right? And seeing the beautiful form of the deity, that's not sense gratification, it's sense satisfaction for the eyes. So Bhakti Siddhanta, he was very strict, very strict. Along with Bhakti Vinod Thakur, both of them were very strong in destroying this cheating mentality, which was so prominent among so-called spiritual persons. And so much so that Bhakti Siddhanta was threatened. There was a plot to kill him because he was so much exposing all these cheaters and he was causing them to be seen by the public by who they were, and it was ruining their business. There's a lot of people where they were making money on selling, you know, darshans to holy places and so many things like this. So they were, that was their livelihood. Bhakti Siddhanta was exposing that. So a whole group of these people got together and decided to kill Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. Serious plot. And they came to the police officer and they said, they approached the police constable. They said, we have this plot and we're telling you, and here is 25,000 rupees. Now you can imagine how much 25,000 rupees was in those days. Now it's nothing, really. Even when Prabhupada was here years ago, it was like 8 or 9 rupees to a dollar. Now it's 40 some. But in those days, 25,000 rupees was a lot of money. And the police officer, he said to these men, he says, later on he came to Bhakti Siddhanta and he told them, he said, generally we take these offers. We didn't, you know, this is part of our service. You take these off. But he said, I could not do it because you are such a saintly person. He warned Bhakti Siddhanta, these men are out to kill you. So you should take heed. So Bhakti Siddhanta was warned by this police officer that these men had come with a big bribe to kill him. He was known as Nrisinga Guru. That was another name for Bhakti Siddhanta. Nrisinga Guru. He was like a lion. He was fierce. He was fearless. And he could not stand sahajiism or cheating mentality. Those who claim to be his spiritual master, Gaurakishore Das Babaji, was also very much strong at exposing cheating, cheaters in the name of spiritual life. It's one thing if you're fallen. If you're fallen and you're struggling, that's one thing. But one who is trying to somehow or other present themselves as a spiritual person, but they have another motivation. They have another program. Their program is not pure devotional service. Their program is to use spiritual life to fulfill their material desires. And it's quite common. And so Bhaktisiddhanta was very strong at exposing these so-called personalities in his writings and his preachings and in so many ways like that. And therefore, his life. Prabhupada said, if they knew what I was saying, they would kill me. Prabhupada said that. If they knew what I was saying, they would kill me. I guess they knew what he was, they found out after Prabhupada left. Prabhupada was saying the same thing. He was teaching a world revolution to completely change the whole face of the world in terms of how things go on in the name of what is called progress. You know what Prabhupada said about Mayapur? He said, we should buy up all the land of Mayapur, create our own state, and separate ourselves from India. Yeah, and we'll have our own money. He said, we'll call it Chaitanya's. We'll have our, just like what they have rupees, we'll have our own, you know, money called Chaitanya's. Yeah, Prabhupada said that. We'll succeed from the state of India and stuff. As Prabhupada said that. So we're still trying. It's a long fight. So Prabhupada had so many revolutionary ideas to change the world and make it Krishna consciousness. Krishna conscious. So Bhaktisiddhanta was preaching. In 1924, he spoke this famous thing, be more humbler than the braid of glass. This was a very famous speech that he made, explaining how here I am sitting on this Vyasasana and I'm receiving so much worship, so much praise, and I am like a big zoo animal. So people come, oh, look at the animal in the zoo. So here's the guru, he's sitting on the... And he's so intoxicated because people are chanting his glories and speaking about and bowing down before him. And he's accepting all that. Therefore, he is like a zoo animal. Doesn't he have any shame? How can he put himself in this position? So he wrote this rhetorical statement about the spiritual master and his position and how it is very, very much against the principle of humility, but at the same time, it is humility personified, because he said, I would accept their criticism, I would accept perdition based on their criticism, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, by my command, be guru, save the land. This is Lord Chaitanya's instruction. Take up the principles of become a spiritual master and preach the glories of Sanatana Dharma throughout the world. Therefore, based on that, based on the desire of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I am willing to accept all criticism of being in a position of being honored. Because people see if a person is honored, they think, oh, that's very nice. So when they see a spiritually minded person or guru getting the same thing, they're thinking, he's thinking like me. Right? What is that? Jayate manyata jagat. What is that statement? Huh? Anmatmana. Atmavan manyate jagat. I think like this, therefore everything is like this. Everything is the way I think. Atmate manyata jagat. Like that. Therefore, Bhaktisiddhanta wrote this very beautiful, quote, humbler than the blade of grass, that to accept the position of the spiritual master on behalf of my spiritual master, and the Lord, and to accept that as a service to the Lord to spread Krishna consciousness. Like that. So he wrote that beautiful. In 1925, he went on Parikram. With huge crowds, they went to, this was a small Parikram to Vrindavan, and they were attacked by rocks and by clubs, by the people, and they were forced to leave. It wasn't easy for him to preach. He was getting a lot of attack from various segments. But at the other time, he was also being appreciated. He sent two sannyasis in 1926 to Bengal, Bihar, Orissa, Northwest India, and in also different areas in Mayapur to preach and to open centers. He was initiating people into sannyas order. Many of his leading brahmacharis became sannyasis. He created a whole army of sannyasis. Prabhupada said, I have created an army of grihasthas. My spiritual master created an army of sannyasis. I have created an army of grihasthas. Yeah, Prabhupada knew that because when his three household couples who were grihasthas, Malati and Shamsundar and Jamuna and Gurudas and Mukunda and Janaki, they went to London and opened up the London Yatra and spread Krishna consciousness there. Prabhupada saw in this how wonderful his grihasthas disciples were, that they were doing the work of sannyasis. That they were doing the work of sannyasis. So Prabhupada gave a lot of responsibility to his grihasthas because they knew, especially in Kali Yuga, just like I go preaching in colleges in America. And I give a lecture and people appreciate it. But if you send a grihastha couple into a college to give a lecture, it has much more effect, much better effect. Because people say, well, who's this guy, you know? He's given up everything in the world and he's speaking, that's nice, but, you know, I can't follow that lifestyle. What he's saying is just too much, you know, his words are nice, but the lifestyle just doesn't fit, you know? Because nobody wants to become sannyasis. You know, they don't even know what it is. But you send a grihastha couple there, well, here's a man and a wife that are married, they're speaking such nice philosophy, they have a family, they have responsibilities, and they're God conscious. It's a model for the people that they're speaking to. And people in the West, they like that. And you can see. And so when we send our grihastha couples to preach, they get great results. Great results. So Prabhupada said, I've started an army of grihasthas. Like that. For preaching. So, but Bhaktisiddhanta set up an army of sannyasis, and they were traveling and preaching throughout. In Kurukshetra in 1928, he preached to thousands, and he set up the first diorama existence using various types of dolls made out of clay and straw and various ingredients. He made different models or images of Krishna's pastimes using that. And he was very successful in displaying Krishna consciousness in that way. And Srila Prabhupada liked that idea. So he also started that. And Prabhupada commissioned some of his devotees in Los Angeles and then later on in Detroit to set up the diorama exhibits. Prabhupada liked that. And today we see, now we have the animatronics and so many other forms of ways of presenting that diorama exhibit, different variations of it in different ways. And people see something visual, something very, very attracting, very colorful. Krishna's leelas, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's leelas, so many things. And in our temples who have that, you get thousands and hundreds and hundreds and thousands of guests who come and see Krishna consciousness in that form. And they're inspired. They become somewhat attracted to Krishna consciousness through that means. So Prabhupada liked that. So that was started by Bhaktisiddhanta. In 1929, one professor from America named Professor Suthers, he was from Ohio State University, he came to India to meet a spiritual teacher to find out about Indian culture. And somehow or other, he came in contact with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And he asked him so many questions. And those questions are recorded in the biographies of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And some of those questions, Bhaktisiddhanta answered his questions in such a way that Professor Suthers was astounded. He couldn't believe the answers. Amazing answers. In fact, some of them were so amazing he couldn't even understand them. Because Bhaktisiddhanta would speak in such high language. He was preaching to very educated forms of people. People with great knowledge. He focused on that. People in high positions. And he used not only his own language, but erudite English. I mean, I know devotees and others who read Bhaktisiddhanta and he's speaking in English, and we can't understand what he's talking about. I'm serious. He uses such esoteric words, all perfect according to linguistic understanding, but they're, I mean, you need a dictionary just to read his works. You just have, it's amazing. But he had that intelligence, that ability. And he preached to Professor Suthers. And so Professor Suthers came back, wrote a nice report, and glorified Bhaktisiddhanta. He was astounded beyond his expectations. And that's a famous discussion. He preached to governors, kings, opened temples, set up dramas, did prasadam distributions, exhibited youth dramas in Mayapur. Thousands came. He did a diorama exhibit that lasted for a month and a half in Mayapur. And in 1930, something changed. The devotees were living very simple. But in 1930, one very wealthy but very devoted follower of Bhaktisiddhanta offered a beautiful, beautiful building in Calcutta, which was later called Bagh Bazar. It was a marble building. Devotees had been living quite simply, and now they had this very palatial marble building. So they moved into that. And that was in 1930. And he opened a school in 1931 in Mayapur called the Bhakti Vinod Thakur Institute. And that school is still there. If you go, you can see it. It's right not too far from our temple in Mayapur. It's a school that was dedicated to Bhakti Vinod Thakur. I left out a lot of his stories in his early years, because I don't know how much time we have. But today is the fast day, so we can go on for a little while. If you have something else you need to take care of, you can do that if you feel like. But I think we can speak for a little while longer. Yes? It's okay. I'm not in charge here, so somebody has to give me the okay. Keep going? Yes? Okay. If there's no no's, that means a yes. So, I mean, that's a great Paramahansa Vaishnava. I'm trying to bring out some of his amazing stories. Earlier in his years, I want to go back on one story. He made a vow, this was before he became sannyas, to chant 1 billion names of the Lord. 1 billion. That's how many crores? That's 1,000 crores, right? 1,000 crores is 1 billion names of God. And he did it. He performed an austerity. He was living at the yoga peak, and he was living and he was chanting. You see, there's one picture where he's sitting there with an umbrella in the monsoons with one hand, and the other hand he's chanting japa. And he did 1 billion names. It took him a few years to complete, but he did it. 1 billion names of God. That's a lot of names. Practically, we won't even reach that in our whole lifetime, even if we chant 16 rounds every day. So that was one of his austerities. And he performed Chaturmasya too. He was only eating a little rice every day and chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. He was very austere. He established the deities of Alanath. Alanath was the place near Jagannath Puri where during the Anavatsara, Lord Chaitanya would leave Jagannath Puri and go to the Alanath temple, and there's a beautiful deity there. And Lord Chaitanya would worship that deity. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati decided to establish a temple there and also establish deities there. There's a famous story where the work was going on very slow in the Alanath temple, and the workers were not so enthusiastic. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, he was quite revolutionary. He did things that were outside of what we can say the normal way that people would do things. So many of these workers, they were smoking bidis. So in order for them to smoke bidis, they would have to roll their bidis and then put it together. It's not like you buy it, like you can buy it now. They put the tobacco on the paper. So this took too much time. So Bhakti Siddhanta arranged for some people to roll the bidis for them, so they could get their bidis faster, and that way they would get back to their work faster, like that. This was him. One time in the early days, he was scheduled to give a lecture in Radhakund, and some of the Radhakund Babaji's were very excited. Oh, here's a great saintly person. He's coming to give a lecture in Radhakund. When he got there, he actually came in a car. He drove into Radhakund in a car. You can see him, he's sitting in the car. At that time, there was very few cars, and Bhakti Siddhanta had a car. Because he had this principle that Rupa Goswami said, Anaya Shakti Svisayam, what is that? Upanam upayunjite nirbandi krishna sambandi yukta vairagya uchyate. That real renunciation is not simply to give up material things. Real renunciation means to use material things in the service of the Lord. That is complete renunciation. So he saw that there were so many material things, but everyone was rejecting it. And he thought this could be used to spread Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada was the same way. We can use typewriters, we can use planes, we can use computers, we can use so many things to spread Krishna, not for sense gratification, but for Krishna consciousness. So he arrived at Radhakund in a car. And guess what? When he gave the lecture there, what did he speak on? They were all thinking he was going to speak on some esoteric leela of Radha and Krishna. He spoke on Sri Yushupanishads. He gave a lecture on Sri Yushupanishads. And everyone was thinking, what kind of holy man is this? He comes to Radhakund, he's speaking the Sri Yushupanishads. They weren't at all happy. But he knew that these Babajis were not real Babajis. That before they could understand Radha Krishna Leela, they should understand that you're not this body. You have to understand you're not this body first. So he wasn't intimidated by anyone. He understood how to preach and what needed to be done. One time, I'll tell one story. There's many more stories. One story where one man, he was a very important man, and I forgot, he had a very high position. He came to see Bhaktisiddhanta, and he said, my dear Guru Maharaj, I have some questions I want to ask you. Bhaktisiddhanta said, I'm sorry, right now I'm very busy, but if you go to the pujaris, they'll answer your questions. So they went to the pujaris, and the pujaris said, actually, we're engaged in polishing the brass and the silver for the deities, so you can help us. And then when we're done, we'll answer your questions. So the man said, fine. So they gave him the paraphernalia, and he was polishing the brass. It took some time, and then they finished. And then the pujari said, what is your questions? And he said, I don't have any questions. He got up and he left. When he was walking out, Bhaktisiddhanta saw him. He said, did the pujaris answer your questions? He said, yes, Guru Maharaj, all my questions are answered. So the point of that story was that by devotional service, things are revealed. A lot of times we have so many questions, but we're not really chanting. We're not really engaging in our devotional service. The more we engage in our devotional service, and the more we chant our rounds attentively, our questions become answered. Our doubts go. Things become easily understood. That is the power of devotional service. Another story, sometimes people would come and they wanted to see Bhaktisiddhanta. He would ask them, oh, are you a devotee of Krishna? And they would say, very proudly, yes. And he would say, well, actually, I have some business right now, but I'll see you at another time. And so he would leave. But then, if someone come and he would ask them, are you a devotee of Krishna? And they would say, no, actually, I'm a devotee of Krishna's devotee. And he would say, oh, please sit down. I have time for you. So therefore, he always wanted to bring out the understanding that, yes, if we think we're Krishna's devotee, we are, Jivar Sarupai Nitya Krishna Das, but we don't identify ourselves as being so advanced as being Krishna's devotee. We identify ourselves as getting the mercy of Krishna through serving his devotees. This is how we get Krishna's mercy. Prabhupada says, if you try to approach Krishna directly, you will fail. But if you approach Krishna's devotees, especially those who are fixed in devotional service, then you get Krishna's mercy. Yasyat prasada bhagavat prasado, yasyat prasadan nagati gutobi. By the mercy of the spiritual master, one gets the mercy of Krishna. And if one can try to approach Krishna directly, one cannot. And Prabhupada says, not only devotee, not only servant of the servant, but servant of the 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 servant. In other words, the more we become servant, the more we actually are in a rightful position. So Prabhupada says, A devotee is a servant 100 times removed. 100 times. So, therefore, Krishna is inclined to give his mercy to those who serve those who are serving him. That is the key to getting Krishna's mercy. Krishna says, those who say he's my devotee is not my devotee, but those who say he's devotee of my devotee is actually my devotee. So Krishna is very happy when one becomes the servant of his devotee. Like that. Lord Chaitanya said, I'm not sannyas, I'm not brahmachari, I'm not grihastha, I'm not vanaprastha, I'm not Brahmin, I'm not Kshatriya, I'm not Vaishya, I'm Sutra, what am I? I'm Gopi Bharta Bhatte Kamalayor, Dasa Dasa Anudas. I'm servant of the servant of the servant of the damsels of Raja. In other words, the more removed the living entity is, the more one is in the topmost position. It's the opposite in the material world. Everyone wants the best position. But a devotee wants the position of servant. Because through service, we actually awaken our love. Love is awakened through service, not by being served. When we are being served, we're accepting service in order to serve. We accept service in order to serve. Why do we sleep? Because the body needs it in order to have to rest. And maintain it. Otherwise, what's the use of sleep? This is a waste of time. But we need it in order to serve. What is the use of eating? Eating is to maintain the body. But we need it in order to serve. We accept sometimes facilities, or we accept even worship in order to take that and serve. We take whatever is given to us in the form of service to us as an opportunity to serve Krishna with that. I was just reading Bhaktivinoda Thakur's book, Jiva Dharma, and it was explaining that the residents, the gopis in Vrindavan, they're not aspiring for personal happiness in their service to the Lord. Their only happiness is to see the Lord's happiness. But they accept their own happiness as an opportunity to give Krishna greater service. They accept their own happiness that they comes by way of their service to Krishna as an opportunity to even to give Krishna more service. Like that. So we accept things in order to increase our, and to maintain and to increase our devotional service. Like that. There's so many nice stories here. At the yoga pit, they were excavating, they were doing some digging at the yoga pit in order to excavate Lord Chaitanya's birthplace, and they found a household deity that was worshipped by Jagannath Mishra. It was a four-armed form of Vishnu, Ahoksa Vishnu. So that deity was found at the yoga pit by the mercy of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. I believe it was in 1931 or 32 that he decided to send some of his leading preachers to go to the Western countries and to spread Krishna consciousness. He gave a famous speech to those devotees that were ready to leave. And he explained in the speech that very few people will appreciate what you are saying. They're not interested. He knew the Western climate. But he says, you will be successful in your preaching if you follow this one principle very carefully. Trinad api sanichena Tayor Iva Sahishnina Amanina Mamanadena. If you follow this principle of humility, tolerance, and pridelessness and respect for others, your preaching will be effective. Your preaching will be effective. And Prabhupada also taught us that same thing. Because how many people want to give up sense gratification? Very few. But when they see these qualities in a person, they're attracted. Although they don't have these qualities themselves, still these qualities are very attractive. And when that's coupled with pure devotional philosophical presentations, it becomes very, very, when we say, attractive. Unfortunately, they didn't really deeply understand the mood of their spiritual master, and many, they all came back with practically no success. Practically no success. There was some little success in London, but that was about all. But many of them, they went to Germany, they went to France, they went to London, they went to Burma, and all came back and said, it's too difficult. These people just don't. They're just too fallen. They can't understand what we are saying. Prabhupada also, when he came to America, he wrote that why have you brought me to this horrible place? All these people are steeped in passionate ignorance. How will they ever understand my message? How will they ever understand my message? But he prayed, my dear Lord, because you have sent me, therefore you have some purpose for me being here. Therefore, I am your puppet. Make me dance, O Lord, make me dance. See, Prabhupada knew that simply that by the desire of the Lord and his own determination, he had hope. And actually, Prabhupada was surprised how certain class of people accepted Krishna consciousness, and that became the beginning of the Hare Krishna movement. That was very difficult. But Prabhupada had one thing in his arsenal that was successful. I was told this story not long ago, actually about 8 years ago. Actually, Bhakti Charu Maharaj told me this story, that Prabhupada's godbrother, Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj. Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj was an amazing personality. He was always chanting. Always chanting. Always chanting. He said, he approached one of Srila Prabhupada, one of his godbrothers, of course they were all godbrothers, and he said, you went to the West, and Bhakti Vedanta, he also went to the West. And you're a great scholar of the Vedas, and he is also a great scholar of the Vedas. You failed, and he succeeded. Why? He asked him that question. And the answer was, and he explained, Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj answers the question, Bhaktivedanta was successful because he had complete faith that simply by spreading the holy name, all success would be there. Simply by spreading the holy name. And what did Prabhupada do? He got a little drum and went to a park in New York City and sat down and chanted Hare Krishna. And some hippies came and they were dancing, and that was the beginning of the Hare Krishna movement. Holding some Bhagavad Gita discussions in the evening and chanting Hare Krishna. Prabhupada knew that if you just glorify the holy name, then gradually the Lord will be pleased and he will inspire people to take up this process. That was Prabhupada's conviction, simply by chanting the holy names. Even today, what is the 10th offense to the holy name? We say the 10 offenses. To not have complete faith in the chanting of the holy name and maintain material attachments, even after understanding so many instructions, that we're not fully understanding the glories of the holy name. Simply by chanting the holy names of the Lord with as much attention and with devotion every day. That is the foundation of all our spiritual advancement. That's the answer to all our problems. That's the solution to everything. And that is the ultimate principle of awakening our love for Krishna. The holy name. There's nothing greater than the holy name. No, that's the greatest gift. It's Krishna's holy name. And it's so simple, right? Just all you have to do is chant these few names. But yet, it's everything. It's amazing, isn't it? Three words, Hare Krishna and Rama. And you become the greatest personality in the world just by chanting Hare Krishna and Rama. Fantastic. What's the qualification? Desire. That's all. The only qualification is you have to have some desire. It's amazing. 1935, first radio broadcast. That was in 1935. I should go back. There was a famous, I think it was in 1929 or 1931, I'm not sure. Bhaktisiddhanta took a whole group of all his devotees and they won parikram to Sri Vrindavan Dham. I think it was in 1931. They stayed in Vrindavan for 40 days and they did parikram to all the holy places. And at that time, Abhay Charan, Srila Prabhupada, came to meet his spiritual master. Yes, it was in 1931. He came to meet his spiritual master. He had joined that parikram. And they were going on to all the holy places. And they were there. And then towards the end of the parikram, there was an announcement one night. The announcement was, we are scheduled to go to the Vishnu temple. Which, was it a hoax that you... Shirashai Vishnu temple. And so therefore, we'll be leaving at 7 o'clock to go. So everyone assemble here. But Guru Maharaj will be giving darshan, and will be giving pravachan in the temple tonight, in a tent tonight. So there's a choice. So most of the devotees went on to see Shirodakshai Vishnu. But Prabhupada stayed to hear his spiritual master. And he was listening. Prabhupada also said, a lot of times when I would listen to my spiritual master, I didn't exactly know what he was saying. But still I would listen. Because he would speak very philosophical terms. And Prabhupada loved to listen. He loved to listen. Prabhupada said, I hardly ever asked a question to my spiritual master. I would just love to hear. I would just love to hear. One time, a little bit later, Prabhupada was recommended by initiation. For initiation, one of the devotees came to Bhaktisiddhanta, and we want to recommend Abhay Babu for initiation. Bhaktisiddhanta said, ah, yes, I will initiate him. Why? He likes to hear. He likes to hear. It's a qualification, liking to hear. Ah, Srinvata Swakadas Krishna Purnya Shravana Kirtana Vedanto Avastani Vidhunoti Sarijtata. And that one who develops this desire to hear, and gradually all inauspicious things within the heart are destroyed. Transcendental loving service is established as an irrevocable fact of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Nasta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagata sevayam bhagavati uttama sloke bhakti bhavati naith. By regular attendance in Srimad Bhagavatam and by rendering service to the pure devotee, all that is inauspicious within the heart is gradually destroyed, and transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord is established as an irrevocable fact. This process of hearing is whole power. Krishna said, he says, just hear from me. Just hear from me. Hear from me with mind attached to me. You can know me in full, free from doubt. The process of hearing is so powerful. That's one of the nine processes. Parikshit Maharaj heard from Sukadeva Goswami for one full week. And he absorbed himself in the process of hearing. He became fully self-realized. Hearing is very powerful. Hearing transcendental knowledge awakens the desire to serve the Lord. It awakens our relationship in transcendental knowledge. So this hearing. So Prabhupada loved to hear. So Bhakti Siddhanta noted that. In 1931, I think, or 32, Prabhupada wrote a poem. That was that famous poem that he wrote in glorification of his spiritual master. I have a copy of the poem here. Would you like to hear it? Beautiful poem. This poem was written by Srila Prabhupada. It was published in Back to Godhead magazine in March of 1952. And it was also published in one of the harmonists, the newspapers written by Bhakti Siddhanta. Prabhupada had written this poem and then he forgot about it. One of our devotees found a copy of the harmonist and showed Prabhupada this poem. He was so happy. He remembered this poem. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati heard this poem. He really appreciated it. And I'll read the poem. O my master, the evangelic angel, give us thy light, light up thy candle. Struggle for existence, a human race, the only hope, His divine grace. Absolute is sentient, thou hast proved, in personal calamity, thou hast moved. This gives us a life, a new and fresh. Worship thy feet, your divine grace. Had you not come, who had told the message of Krishna, forceful and bold, that's our right. You have the mace, save me of falling, your divine grace. The line of service as drawn by you is pleasing and healthy like morning dew. The oldest of all, but in new dress, miracle done, your divine grace. This one line, absolute is sentient, thou hast proved, in personal calamity thou hast moved. When Bhakti Siddhanta read that, he was happy. He said, he has understood my mission. He has understood my mission. Prabhupada understood the mind of his spiritual master. He came to destroy impersonalism and mayavadism, voidism. Prabhupada also developed that same mood. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gaudavani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Pasyatya Desatarne Nirvishesha Sunyavadi. To destroy or to defeat impersonalist philosophy and the concept that you can merge into God and become God or become nothing. The soul is eternally the servant of the Lord individually. It remains in its own individual position, either in the material world, in the spiritual world, or in between. Wherever it is, in the Vaikuntha planets, in the Brahmajyoti, or wherever it is, the soul is still individual. It can never, what we say, lose its identity. So Bhakti Siddhanta mission was to destroy this mood of impersonalism in Mayavadi. Prabhupada understood his mind. He completed 12 cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam. He wrote a commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam. He also wrote a commentary on Vrindavan Das Thakur Chaitanya Bhagavat, which is being printed and made available now in series of volumes, the Chaitanya Bhagavat with purports by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswat. And his purports are really, really lengthy and very philosophical, deep. I was reading that Chaitanya Bhagavat, and it was one purport. It was 20 pages. 20-page purport. Some of them are 10 pages, 8 pages. Very interesting philosophical. Preaching was going on, and devotees were... But then things started to change. Of course, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was getting on in age, and his preaching was developing. But the devotees had gotten this building in 1930. And so their mood changed a little bit. Now that they had this nice building, they were all more or less thinking, well, I want to live in this room. And this is my room. This room is suitable for my service. I want this room. I want this room. So there was some tension and some fighting actually going on amongst the disciples. And Prabhupada came to see his spiritual master in Radhakund in 1936. And he was walking. There's a picture. You can see that. It's a beautiful picture where Prabhupada is there with his little child. He's holding the hand of his son. And he's walking alongside the Bhaktisiddhanta. Bhaktisiddhanta has a very, very concerned look on his face. And he said, Agun Dwalbe. Agun Dwalbe, which is Bengali for there's fire. There's fire in the mat. And then he explained, ever since we got this building, now everyone is fighting. And the preaching spirit is going down. So therefore, he said to Srila Prabhupada, if you ever get money, print books. If you ever get money, print books. And so Prabhupada took that instruction to heart, and he made book distribution his main form of preaching. And to this day, we see throughout the world how many books are going out, because Prabhupada emphasized book distribution because it was the instructions of his spiritual master. He explained that it is the Brihat Murdanga, the books. If one simply reads these books, their life becomes transformed. Prabhupada wrote in 1977, just before he left the planet, May 6, 1977, you get a copy of this letter. It's a very interesting letter. Prabhupada says, if someone sees a book, touches a book, opens a book, what's to speak about reading their book, their life is transformed. If they simply touch the book, even if they don't even read it, if they touch this book, they receive the mercy of the Lord. Books are so powerful. We've seen in our Krishna consciousness how it's transformed the lives of so many devotees. I remember when I was in Chicago, I was preaching there, and there was one young man who came to the temple. And then he told me his story. He said one day he was sitting in his house, and his father was carrying out all his old books. He was bringing them to a bookstore to sell. And then he saw on the top of one of the boxes his father was carrying, he saw the Bhagavad Gita. And he said, what is that? So he took the book and he read it. And he liked it. He read half the Gita. And then he was thinking, who are these people? What is this philosophy? This is very interesting. But there was no address. So he was thinking, I have to find these people. So one day he was walking along the street and he was approached by a devotee. And he said, oh, I've been looking for you. Yes, we have a temple here in Chicago. Come. So he came. He liked the devotees. Came, joined the temple, shaved up. I remember I took him to New Vrindavan. I drove him there personally. He came and became the temple commander in New Vrindavan and stayed there and preached and got initiated and became a devotee. Simply because he saw this book one day his father was taking to sell. Books are powerful. There's many stories about book distribution, how it's transformed the lives of people. Especially in the West. In the West. Indian book distribution is also going on very nicely, and people are getting books and transforming. But in the West, these books are so revolutionary because people have never seen anything like this philosophy. They've never seen it before. So when they read these books, they're amazed, a lot of people. And actually they come to temples, or sometimes they don't even come to temples. They just buy the books through the books agencies and just read them at their homes and keep books. I remember one day devotees were traveling and they were somewhere way in some place away from all civilization. And they were looking for some place to make a phone call. So they knocked on this one house that was all by itself somewhere. And they opened the door and people said, oh, the Hare Krishnas. How do you know us? We have your books. We never met you, but we heard of, we have your books. We got your books somehow. They had the books. So people read the books a lot of times. They like our books. So Prabhupada, following in the instructions of Bhaktisiddhanta, Prabhupada, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said three things. Book publishing, book distribution, namhat. Publish the books, distribute the books, and then go out and preach the glories of these books to people. And that is our process. Establish these namhat centers where we can open up temples practically on every street. Little places where people are chanting and reading Prabhupada's books. There's so many stories. I left out a lot. He started boat preaching. He was going up and down the Ganges River and doing preaching by boat, stopping at different little places along the Ganges and holding kirtan and pravachan like that. So many wonderful stories. Of course, his disappearance was he left this world in January 1st at 5:30 a.m. on 1937. But before he left, he wanted to establish a GBC, a governing body commission of his leading disciples to manage the affairs of the Gaudiya Math. That was one of his instructions. He said, set up a GBC. They failed to do it. They didn't follow that instruction. And because of that, after he left, they were fighting, who is the next Acharya? Who is the next Acharya? And Prabhupada said, to this day, they're still fighting, who is the next Acharya? 40 years later, the same thing is going on. Even more. So, in 1970, when Prabhupada's movement was still very new in the West, Prabhupada established the governing body commission to manage the affairs of the ISKCON society. He saw the failure of the Gaudiya Math to establish the GBC. And what happened because of that? Their preaching became practically stopped. They were just maintaining their temples, and no one could, they were undecided or fighting amongst themselves. claiming to be successors to Bhaktisiddhanta. But some of them got the property of the spiritual master, but others got the mercy of the spiritual master, those who went out and preached. And Prabhupada got the real wealth of his spiritual master, his mercy, because he took his spiritual master's instructions and brought it everywhere. And Prabhupada used to say when he was glorified for his success, "My only credit is that I have never changed anything my spiritual master said. That is my credit for spreading this Krishna conscious movement. That I never changed anything. I never added, I never subtracted." Of course, he preached according to time and circumstances, and he used his ability and his empowerment. One who preaches according to time and circumstances not only has to have the idea, but they have to have the empowerment. They have to be empowered by the Lord. Krishna Shakti Vinanahe Tadva Vartanam. They have to be empowered to be able to adjust things according to time, place, and circumstance. There are people who adjust things according to time, place, and circumstance, but they're not empowered. Because they're not empowered, it falls through. It doesn't last. But one who's not only has the realization, but the empowerment, then they can spread Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada had the empowerment, and he had the realizations. And therefore he adjusted things according to what is called the climate of the West. And Prabhupada was successful in spreading Krishna consciousness. So, therefore, but he took the instructions of his spiritual master as his life and soul. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, "One who makes the instructions of the spiritual master his life and soul," he explained that is the purport of the Bhagavad Gita verse, "Vyavyasatmika Buddhir Ekeha Kura Nandanaha Bahu Sakya Yanatasya Buddhayo Vyavasahinam." One who is resolute, one who is resolute on this purpose, their aim is one. One whose aim is one. They're not deviated by so many things. That is the purport of this verse, that one has to make the instructions of the spiritual master one's life and soul. And that is the success in Krishna consciousness. There's no other success. Our success is not anything material. Our success is how much we hold the instructions of the spiritual master to our heart and in our life, and make that our focus in everything we do. That is our success in spiritual life. And Prabhupada showed by his example how to do it. Okay, there's so many more stories of the life of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. But pretty soon we'll be beginning the Pushpanjali. I think it starts at 11:30. Is that the actual commencement of the Pushpanjali? So we'll stop here so we can take a little break. And 11:30, I think, begins the Pushpanjali, and some might be more glorification of Bhaktisiddhanta, also Guru Puja, Arti, and then, of course, a wonderful transcendental feast in honor of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So today is a very, very wonderful day. Srila Prabhupada came walking into one temple. I don't remember the temple. And it was the appearance day. It was the appearance or disappearance day, I'm not sure, of his spiritual master. And the devotees hadn't really made any preparations. Prabhupada was very upset. Immediately he walked into the kitchen and he asked everyone to leave except one person, and he cooked a feast for his spiritual master by himself. And in 1 hour, he cooked a 10-course feast for his spiritual master, enough for everybody in the whole temple. Prabhupada cooked himself. He was an expert cook. And he was showing that we should honor his spiritual master nicely on this day, because it's a very, very important day. Of course, your spiritual master, His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj, always shows great regard and puts a lot of emphasis on glorifying Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati on this wonderful day. Practically everything I said today comes from the lecture of Radhanath Maharaj. So, plus I left out a lot. So Maharaj has spoken so wonderfully on the glories of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, because he knows that pleases Srila Prabhupada, and Bhakti Siddhanta is so important. He's such an empowered and important personality. And actually it was his desire to bring Krishna consciousness to the world. Bhaktivinoda Thakur had the thought, he had the vision that someday the whole world would be chanting and dancing, chanting the names Jai Sachinandana, Jai Sachinandana. It was Bhakti Siddhanta who actually formulated that desire into a practical way and sent his devotees around the world. And it was Srila Prabhupada who did it, who performed that service of bringing Krishna consciousness to the world. And I was talking to one devotee yesterday. We were discussing how degraded and how dangerous the world has become. I mean, it's always been a dangerous place. But lately, as Prabhupada says, they're creating more and more means for catastrophe. And the world is in a very, very precarious situation now. Practically, you know, there's sectors of the world that are just eager for war. They're just looking for the right opportunity to start a war. And that's, you know, it could happen at any time. And then besides that, there are also so many social, political, and just psychological problems. The world isn't a very difficult. So there's no real solution to the problems of the world except Krishna consciousness. There's no solution. Even we were speaking how many of the major religions of the world have compromised their principles in order to allow for certain social and political ideas to manifest. The Prabhupada said, no compromise. Chant 16 rounds, follow 4 regulative principles. No compromise. And he says, purity, he said the 4 things. Books are the basis. Utility is the principle. Purity is the force. Preaching is the essence. This was the motto of Krishna consciousness. The transcendental philosophy of Krishna consciousness is the panacea to awake people from their ignorance, the holy name and transcendental knowledge. Utility is the principle. We can use whatever Krishna provides for Krishna consciousness. But if we want to be effective, we have to keep purity. Shruti Kirti Prabhu, who speaks about Prabhupada and being his personal service, said that Prabhupada was always very, very tolerant, patient, kind. But one thing he could not tolerate is any deviation in philosophy. As soon as there was a slight deviation in philosophical principles, Prabhupada would be there to keep it corrected and bring it back. No change. People want to change Prabhupada's books. Yeah, even today they want to make the books adaptable to today's world. Yes, even within our own movement, this is going on. Is Prabhupada's book still relevant? Prabhupada said, my books will be the law books for the next 10,000 years. No change. Pure devotional service as given by the pure devotee. So this purity is the force, and preaching is the essence. Preaching is the means for bringing this message to the world. And the world is in bad shape. It's in bad shape. And India is starting to look like the West. I'm saying, sorry to say that, but it's in India now they're adopting so many of the habits of Western society. And a lot of them are not healthy. A lot of them are not healthy. And the most dangerous of all those things is that they're rejecting their culture and in thinking that Western culture is superior, that we're missing something. We, all these years, we missed out on real enjoyment. But now we have computers and televisions and rock and roll and, you know, fashionable clothes, so many nice things. This is the new deity. Okay. But it's not a deity, it's Maya Devi. It's Maya Devi. And it simply leads to the same problems that the West is struggling with. Abortion, broken homes, broken families, crime, drugs, alcoholism. There are so many problems. And America and Western countries are very physically unhealthy. Although they have so many programs for health, they're the most unhealthiest of all nations. Why? Because too much sense gratification makes you unhealthy. Yeah, it's unhealthy. Too much. So this is the problem. Anyway, we have a great mission. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati was a stalwart pillar in bringing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's message to the world. And so we are honored to be able to be here and to be able to speak about him, to remember him, and to remember his instructions for us, along with the instructions of Srila Prabhupada and our spiritual master. Okay. Any questions before we stop? Yes, a question. Okay. How does one get empowered? Krishna Shakti Vinana He Tadvahartan. Unless one is empowered, one cannot spread Krishna consciousness. By qualifying. If you want to become empowered, you have to qualify yourself. Just like if you want to be a good dancer or a good actor, you have to practice. And then when you become good enough, you can perform for the public. You can do public exhibitions. Then you're qualified to be good enough for public. So you have to qualify. So what is the qualification? One has to be sincere and one has to be determined. And Lord Chaitanya is just waiting to give his empowerment to anyone who qualifies. Because Lord Chaitanya has said himself that I have so many fruits, and these fruits are the fruits of love of God. And how much can I distribute? I'm only one person. Therefore, please help me distribute these fruits. So he's asking us to become qualified to assist him in distributing the message. So the main thing, become qualified, is to associate with people who are qualified. When you associate with devotees who are fixed and determined in Krishna consciousness, you develop that quality also. You can be determined, but if you don't associate, it's very difficult, practically impossible. Association is the foundation, because we develop the qualities and characteristics and the mood that is necessary to take up, we say, serious devotional service. So empowerment comes by the mercy of the Lord. When he sees one is qualified, then he gives empowerment. One can be empowered to be a good cook. One can be empowered to be a good pujari. One can be empowered to be a good kirtan singer. It's not anything material. It's simply our desire and the mercy of the Lord. I like that. Okay. So we'll take a little break and get ready for the Pushpanjali. Thank you very much, His Divine Grace, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaj Ki, Srila Prabhupada Ki, Hare Krishna.